Artificial intelligence is a real problem for us, as far as we are told. It's going to take all of our jobs. And if you are in computer science and graduating right now, or maybe have been in computer science, people are finding a difficult time entering the workforce or finding jobs right now because of artificial intelligence. Talk about that with us and some other issues with AI is CNN tech contributor Lisa Itachico with us on KMOX. Lisa, we appreciate your time. How you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, thank you for being with us. And, just reading the story that you had written for CNN about how difficult it is for people who are in computer science, and for years we have been told this is a great thing to get into. Well, apparently it is now becoming difficult to get into that line of work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's kind of what we're seeing now in some of the data out there on unemployment right now, and especially for entry-level roles in computer science. The demand is shrinking a little bit. And I think this is something that there's a lot of factors, right? I think maybe AI is part of it. I think we have two things that are kind of happening at the same time here, which is that companies are looking to downsize a bit. And also at the same time, companies are starting to use AI in bigger ways in the workplace. And I think we're seeing that a lot in the tech space, because there's a lot of these coding tools out there that can write some code for you or assist you in writing code. Now, that doesn't mean that these tools are going to entirely replace people, as some of the people we spoke to, the students in the story, which, some of them, even though they've been having a rough time, are actually pretty optimistic. The code always has to be checked by a human. There are certain things that need to be maintained by a human that AI can't do. But I do think it changes the job at a time when these students are already breaking into a really competitive market.
Is it a certain segment of IT or computer science that AI is threatening the most? Because I know it's such a broad field. It's like the medical field. You could be an orthopedic surgeon, or you could be a brain surgeon, totally different things. Is there a part of IT that AI is affecting the most?
It seems like it's affecting software engineers more so than IT. So IT is usually maintaining equipment and things like that. The person that you call at work when your computer is not working or you can't get something to connect, right? And I'm sure AI will affect those roles at some point too. But I think where we're seeing the biggest impact right now is in software engineering. So people who write code for a living, whether that's back end or front end code. Back end is, the code that supports the website or application that you're using. And then the front end is what controls how a website or an app looks. So like the design element and things like that. So I think that's where we're seeing a lot of the impact right now. And it does, as you mentioned, it's a broad field. It does vary from time to time. I think the people that I spoke with seem to use it most for just kind of, doing some of the menial tasks that they might not want to do, or for learning about a new language for the first time. So there's a lot of different languages in computer science. And, one thing that AI has been helpful for is helping developers kind of switch between them and learn the basics of a language that they might not be super familiar with.
So I know that AI can be a very useful tool in a lot of different fields, a lot of different areas. Is it possible to get to a sweet spot here where it does help people with busy work, but also doesn't take a lot of jobs away from everybody else? Because if that's what starts to happen, then we are in serious trouble.
Yeah, I think that's the optimistic case for sure. This idea that this technology will help you do your job and it'll kind of automate the parts that you don't want to do and the things that take up your day but really aren't a part of the core role that you're here to do. That's the optimistic case for sure, is that AI will do that for you and will let you do more of the things that you get fulfillment or career growth out of, right? The things that you need to be doing that AI can't do or can't be automated. But I do think that while that is certainly a possibility, and I do think that's part of it, the thing that worries me and that I think a lot of people have been talking about is some of those menial tasks are what entry-level people do right now. And if you aren't assigning those things to entry-level people, what are entry-level folks doing? And how do you have an entry-level workforce that you can then train up and upskill to eventually become a senior person and become a leader if you're replacing some of that work with AI? So I think that's the question that everyone's trying to answer right now, I think, is what does the role of an entry-level worker look like across different fields if we use AI to automate some of those tasks?
Because I think a lot of us don't really have a whole lot of faith in artificial intelligence companies in reeling it in or putting guardrails up for themselves. What is the role of governments around the world, what they are going to have to do to try to make sure it does not get out of hand in that way?
That's a certainly a big question. And I think with AI in general, like aside from just this, future of work and what it means for jobs, I think in general, there's been this question of how do we regulate AI? What is the appropriate level of regulation? Because it's not just about the threat that it could have to jobs in the future, but also, there's a lot of like safety questions around AI as well. These systems are still computer systems. They're still very flawed in some ways, even though they can do incredible things. They also make a lot of mistakes and they can be kind of irresponsible sometimes, right? Because they're not people. So I think there's this kind of this struggle to be careful and be safe with how these systems are deployed and what they're used for, while also moving fast and moving quickly. Because another thing that's a really big priority in the government right now is making sure that the US is a leader in AI and that we're not putting up too many guardrails that'll slow down development and deployment of AI, especially as, China is, has a really big growing academic field and does a lot of AI research. And, there's this concern about the US falling behind in the AI race. So I think that's a big question and something that I think a lot of lawmakers and regulators are trying to answer right now, but I think it'll be some time before we truly find that sweet spot.
Switching over to ChatGPT, and ChatGPT's parent company, OpenAI, is planning, or at least says it is planning, to launch parental controls. Now, this comes on the heels of just some tragic stories of young people interacting with ChatGPT and then taking their own lives. And the parents have filed lawsuits in multiple cases saying that the ChatGPT advised the teenagers on their suicides or contributed to their suicides. Can you set the table a little bit on what happened, perhaps in these cases, and how ChatGPT helps to curb this trend?
So there have been a couple of really tragic cases, as you mentioned. One of them was recent. The parents of a 16-year-old named Adam Rain filed a lawsuit against OpenAI, alleging that ChatGPT advised on the teenager on his suicide. There was also a separate case, not involving ChatGPT, but another app called Character AI. A Florida mom sued that company last year, alleging that her son died by suicide after developing an inappropriate relationship with chatbots on that platform. So, what's been happening here is that people are seemingly either, consulting AI chatbots on these really, really difficult mental health subject matters, or they're forming these bonds with AI in a way that makes it difficult to kind of blur the line between reality and fantasy. And it's not just teenagers. There's also been reports around adults using ChatGPT and kind of falling into a delusion and alienating themselves from loved ones because they're believing these things that ChatGPT are telling them, and it's causing them to kind of break from reality. It's really, really unbelievable situations here. And so what OpenAI is doing now is they're within the next month planning to roll out parental controls that will include things like the option for parents to link their account with their teen's account, manage certain features and choose to disable them, like memory and chat history, which could potentially help with sometimes with these longer conversations. If ChatGPT can draw on old chats and remember what you said, it makes ChatGPT sound a little more personal and a little more human-like. So that's probably one of the reasons why a parent might want to disable that. And then also receive notifications when the system detects that their teen might be in a moment of distress when interacting with ChatGPT.
So again, when I asked the question earlier about trusting these companies to do the right thing, put up the right guardrails, should we trust them that these parental controls will be good enough and will be sufficient to stop any of this?
That's a difficult question because I think part of the problem here is that not only necessarily that maybe these companies are not putting enough protections in, but in some cases, I truly think they don't expect these things to happen. And I think that's the question that needs to be answered is how do these companies kind of foresee what these risks are going to be before they happen? Because I don't think that a company like OpenAI predicted that people would form social relationships or seek life advice from ChatGPT. And if they did, they certainly should have taken that into account. But it's definitely something that I think that's kind of the issue with technology in general here sometimes is that you don't often know what the negative side effects are until it's too late. And this is something that Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, has also kind of mentioned in the past when he's testified about this at a Senate subcommittee on AI regulation earlier this year. He was asked, is enough being done to protect children? And he even said at the time that this idea of social relationships and life advice from ChatGPT is something that really needs to be kept an eye on.
And it is kind of interesting too, because with OpenAI, like how can they anticipate how people would interact with it? There's also no stasis with AI and ChatGPT because it's constantly learning and responding and interacting. So ChatGPT is never stagnant. It's not staying the same. It seems that like if I were a parent, it would be up to me not to trust ChatGPT to put in guardrails and to just stay on top of, my kid and their interactions and how what they're telling ChatGPT because the technology itself is always changing. Like OpenAI, it has to be reacting. They're not getting ahead of anything.
I think that's right in a sense that it is always changing and people are always using it in different ways that are unexpected that can't be predicted. And I do think that part of the answering this question and solving this problem has to be around education as well, especially if the kids are adopting this technology faster than the parents are. We know that young people tend to adopt technology more quickly and embrace it more quickly, and especially this generation of kids growing up with AI, they're definitely, I'm sure they're going to embrace it more than their parents are, right? So how do we educate people in the dangers and the risks and help, in addition to these companies and holding them accountable, because they certainly do have to be accountable and be part of this, and they should be maybe part of helping with that education component. But I think that's a really good question.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think parents are wondering what they can do in the meantime if they're not as savvy with this or any other sort of technology. Like, how do they, for the time being, before controls are in place, before all of these safeguards hopefully are implemented, like what can they do in the meantime?
I think so. There are things that you can do. There are apps out there that help you kind of set parental controls in terms of like monitoring app usage. There's also settings in your phone, both on iPhone and Android, that can help restrict certain apps or set time limits on certain apps. And then I also think just having a conversation with your children ab about the technology and reiterating to them that, hey, this isn't a person, this isn't real, this is what it's okay to use it for, this is what it's not okay to use it for, here's how you should use it. I think those are the things that parents and teachers and other adults could be doing in the meantime.
Lisa Itachico, CNN tech contributor. We appreciate you. Thank you for talking with us about this today.
Of course, thank you again so much for having me.
That is Lisa Itachico. Again, she works for CNN.